Hello and welcome back to another exciting episode of Online with USU. I'm Jessica.
And I'm Dan.
And today we are going to be talking about note-taking strategies.
Yeah, note-taking is a very important aspect of normally attending class and building your study materials. And in an online class, there are some great advantages because you don't have that regular time constraint that you would if you had to go to class and had 50 minutes. You're not sitting there trying to catch everything the professor says in a brief time. You can actually put the professor on pause if you have a video, you know. Comes in great. Unfortunately, this leads to two pitfalls. First off, online students, we don't tend to take notes if we're in an online class because we feel like we can review that material anytime we want. You know, why take notes if you can just go back and re-listen to the lecture? Or two, we tend to take too many notes. Because we can pause it, we can write down everything the professor is saying. So someone that feels that they learn a lot from notes is going to be tempted to try to make the best notes possible. And the best notes possible does not mean writing everything down.
I definitely erred on the side of taking too many notes because I was stressed. I was like, what if this is important? But it also led to me writing down a lot of things that I already knew. Something that is a good idea is to learn ways that you can identify the key information to pay attention to. And part of this is looking at the course syllabus, because professors very often will list out each week or each class even what they're going to be talking about. And you can review material related to that if there's assigned textbook reading or if you're reading like an outside book about it. Maybe read those materials or at least skim them so you can at least understand maybe what exactly will be covered. And then you can also think of questions that you don't understand about a topic.
I think it's important to note that a lot of academic writings follow the standard procedure of tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. I mean, this is standard textbooks. That's why you have introductions and conclusions, right? It's the standard thing with essays. But a lot of textbooks are written the same way. And so if you find a thing in the introduction that's also in the conclusion, skim for the parts in the, or, you know, skim and scan for the parts in the body that have that, and you can be sure that that's going to be some important stuff.
Yeah, and skimming is a great skill to develop. I could never skim, but people who skimmed said they had more effective reading sessions with their textbooks because they weren't reading every single thing. Personal preference.
as a history major, I had to read a lot of books, or at least I was supposed to have read a lot of books. I think it's awesome that one of my professors said that if you were to give a test to a master's student in history to test the skills that they develop, it would consist of a table with like 20 books on it, and you would have 4 hours to write the main ideas of those books and how they're all related, because that's what you learn how to do in a history master's degree. And in an undergraduate degree, you kind of start picking up on those skills. And so skimming and scanning, skimming, of course, reading information quickly to get general ideas, and scanning for specific information are fantastic ways of getting through material quickly. The thing is, before you can scan, you have to know what you're scanning for. You have to know what those important ideas are. And the same thing is true of when listening to a lecture. You have to be able to listen to something and be able to pick up on what's the important stuff. Now, this is a little easier when you can see the individual. Body language can play a big part here. Repetition plays a big part as well. If a professor says something multiple times, either within close succession or over the course of the lecture, you can bet that that's something that's important.
I had an AP history teacher in high school, and he always said, this is going to be on the AP test. It's always on the AP test. And then one kid actually wrote down every time he said that, and I'm sure that guy aced the test because he knew exactly what was going to be on the test. So it's true. Teachers and textbooks will tell you exactly what you're going to be tested on. It's just identifying that information. And what you can do is you can create a system that works for you where you can mark your notes, or you can write in your textbook saying, oh, this is a key point, or I have a question about this. And then that way, when you're going back and you're reviewing later, you can easily look for the points that you understood well, the points that you needed to work on, or like topics you had questions on.
Did you have a system like this?
No, not a very good system. I would sometimes use, when I would rewrite notes, I would maybe go back and highlight different words with a different color. So, I mean, I had a system, but it wasn't like a fully developed system. It was more of like what worked at that exact moment, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's important to note that there are very complex systems. There are very complex color-coded ways of taking notes. But there's also just simple systems as well. There's nothing wrong with having a simple system that works for you. I used erasable colored pencils for my master's programs to do all my note-taking, to do all my highlighting and stuff like that in my textbooks. And I liked it because it gave me multiple colors so I could differentiate different concepts. So like, for instance, I could underline one section or one passage that had multiple components in it in one color. So it's saying, okay, here's the entire thing that I'm looking at here, and then circle different bits or different words in other colors to make those ones stand out. I never had a, you know, yellow means this, red means this system, but having multiple colors made it a lot more flexible when I was looking at complex ideas or at compound ideas, you know, things made up of different components. Made it easy to differentiate what those components were, and then I could take notes in that color with the colored pencil to denote what went where.
That's a good idea.
With highlighting or marking, I think it's very, very important. I personally believe that you shouldn't mark anything in a textbook without annotating as well. And annotating is a form of taking notes. We were talking before we were getting ready for this about how did we take notes and stuff like that. And for most of my master's, all of my notes were in my textbooks in the margins through annotations. And annotating, again, you fall into the pitfall of either too much or too little. The whole point of annotating is to give the reason why you highlighted what you did in the textbook. Why is this important? And so writing simple descriptions such as, you know, definition, you know, DEF next to a marker, can let you know, okay, this is where I define a concept. And, you know, again, maybe you highlight the word that you're defining in one color and then underline the definition in the other color, so that you can find it very easily if you want to review it, or if you have any question about, okay, this word, what's that mean again? Oh, here it is. It makes it very, very easy to find that way. But I personally believe that you probably shouldn't mark without annotating, or vice versa.
When you're annotating, though, are you writing a lot next to whatever you marked, or are you writing short, succinct phrases?
That's a great question. And I actually grabbed one of my textbooks here from my master's program. My master's is in academic advising, so this is student development in college, practice, theories, and research. And looking through here, I've got various things. Most of my notes, oh, here's one right here. Duh. You know, conflict resulting from exposure to real life issues. Duh.
Well, peak academic performance.
Yeah, let me tell you there. But, you know, in relationship to the rest of what's on here, it's obviously, the book is pointing out the obvious, but it's pointing out the obvious because the obvious is important. Sometimes we miss the obvious. But I've got some lists here, level 1, 2, and 3. And so I've got a lot of succinct summaries of what it is. And I have found a couple of annotations without marking. And in those cases, just glancing at it and looking at it, it's a brief summary of that paragraph. So you can annotate on a variety of things. You can annotate on whole paragraphs rather than trying to mark up individual things. If you want to write a summary, you can annotate on very specific concepts within the ideas. But that enables you to go back through when you're looking to refresh yourself. Because really, I mean, the whole point of taking notes is to give ourselves a record of what's important and what we need to remember. And so when you're looking to refresh your memory and get back into things, this enables you to go through your textbook much, much easier. Your textbook or the documents, whatever you're reading, as well as the professor's lectures, and refresh yourself on what's important.
I think the most important thing about developing a system for reviewing notes is making sure that it complements your learning style and, you know, the areas where you struggle. A lot of people are good at like logical, like mathematical things where it's just a process and there's no right answer. And then some people really struggle with understanding and applying concepts that they learn to like real world, you know, situations. So when you're developing these systems and you're taking notes, you know, keep in mind what will help you best later when you're preparing for a test or a project or whatever it is.
Yeah, depending on how your mind is organized, you may be taking more of an outline format, or you may do a mind map, you know, where you write a concept in the middle of the page, circle it, and draw lines out to the corresponding components or aspects of that concept. There's so many different ways, and most of them are visual, and so there's little to no point in going over trying to describe all of them on a on a podcast. Go check them out yourself. Although I think you did want to bring up the Cornell method, which is a very excellent method, and we can describe that pretty well.
Yes, and we also have a page that we can link on one of USU's websites. But the Cornell, I think the important thing about when you're taking notes is making sure that you can either rewrite it later as a study guide or take notes that can be used as a study guide. And that's exactly what the Cornell study notes is. I wasn't always diligent about this, but I remember when I first learned about this in middle school, I was like, mind blown. Like that little emoji with the mind blown.
Yes. I mean, and it is a fantastic method because it's a built-in system. So often, I mean, and growing up for me, taking notes, you took notes, you'd go back and review your notes, and that was it. Like, that was it. But the Cornell method, which I'm familiar with, although I didn't learn about it until after I was done with my undergrad, that was less than ideal. It really is a system of doing this. So how does this work, Jessica?
Okay, so you divide your page into kind of three areas. It's kind of like an upside down T chart. So on the left hand side, you'll have kind of a smaller column, and that's where you're going to put the big main idea. So if you're, for example, if your professor is using a PowerPoint and they have a slide that says a topic, we'll say supply and demand, you'll write supply and demand in this left hand column. And then on the right hand side, you're going to want to make that section a little bigger, but that's where you write down key points. And also, as things come up, like if you have a question, you write that underneath the supply and demand section heading on the left-hand side. Because then when you go back to review, you can actually fold over the right-hand side of the paper, and then you have a built-in study guide. So if you had a question like, oh, if X happens to supply, what happens to demand? And then you could have the answer right next to that in the right-hand side. I'm probably not explaining this very well, but it's very genius. And then the bottom section of the page is just a summary of exactly everything you just wrote above. It's genius.
Yeah. I mean, so the benefits of this are, one, on the right-hand side where you're taking the bulk of your notes, you've got all of the information, right? And then on the left-hand side, you've almost got a table of contexts or contents, or not quite an index, but you've got, in essence, what you do when you annotate a textbook. You've got these
like
short
a hierarchy
little things. Yeah.
Of content.
Yeah. And you could create that after you've actually taken the notes or while you're taking notes, depending on your style. And then the bottom portion, the summary, I was always, when I learned about it, I learned that you write it out like a paragraph, like write an actual thing like, okay, this, you know, this lecture covered this. And the audience you have in mind is somebody else that wasn't in the class. And this, just like we talked about how when preparing for study, for a test, if you can teach it to somebody else, that shows a deeper understanding. And so that summary portion is kind of a way of helping to distill that on a higher level of understanding that, yes, I do understand this concept. And I mean, yeah, I'd write that out and then give that to somebody and say, like, does this make sense? Do you understand what's going on here?
Exactly. And then, like you said, if you go back and create a Cornell style notes later, you can actually build it in questions, like multiple choice questions. Mm-hmm. Or you could have someone else kind of build these out. If you're in a study group, you can each make a study guide. Genius. You're making your own study guides and you're learning much more efficiently.
I had a professor that I think this was one of the brainiest moves ever. Part of our assignment for the class, we were going through all of these different, shall we say, artifacts. Like we were covering these things, and each topic, each section we covered would have artifacts. Like we had the Bayeux Tapestry, we had Stonehenge, we had History of the Black Death, we had Pompeii. So we had all of these things that we were covering, and for each concept we had to write fill in the blank questions, and she would then take from, I mean, there were like 130 people in this class, it was a freshman level course, and we each wrote five questions, and so for each test she would take like 10 of these questions in addition to a bunch of her own questions, but she would take like 10 of these questions and ask them on the test. And so, as I said, I called this brainy move ever, because one, the writing the question required us to really think about the topic and make sure that we understood what was going on there. Two, you always got thrilled when you saw your own question on the test. You're always like,
you're like, yes, I know I'm getting at least one point.
Yeah, exactly. I know the answer to this one, and she used my question. And then three, it was a lot less work for her. It was genius. When I taught college success skills class, that I did the same thing. I started requiring test questions. But doing this for your study, whether it's, I said, we did fill in the blank for this class, but multiple choice, short essay, or just think, if I was to ask somebody about this, what would I ask them? You know, how would I want to know that they understood what was going on? You know, what question would I ask for that? And again, it's a genius study move because one, it requires you to think deeper on it. So you've got a deeper understanding. And two, you might very well guess the questions on the test, which, you know, imagine you get to the test and you see, hey, wait, that's what I would have asked. I know the answer to this.
And then, of course, you can always just rewrite your notes. That's also great. Studies have shown that if you rewrite things and if you physically write things down, like on paper, you'll have better recall because you have to actually think about what you're writing.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, computer notes work as well. I did not always do this in college, but I know you did your whole master's with notes.
I did my whole master's on computers. I actually I did a lot of research notes. Whenever I had to write a paper, I would write a lot of research notes on a computer. The library actually allowed you to check out laptops when I was there. And before I had my own laptop, I would go and check out a laptop and grab all my books, pile them up, and then take all my notes on the computer and just save it on a flash drive. But there are some fantastic benefits to taking notes on a computer. One of them being is that they're very portable. As I said, I just save it on a flash drive. Two, they're searchable. So if you're dealing with lots of concepts, lots of vocab words, those sorts of things, you can control F and you can find this if you want. You can also copy and paste, so you can move things around. It makes it great for organization. Some downsides, though, is that it can still be a little cumbersome. I do tend to kind of think better on my feet when I'm writing by hand, and think faster. So if I'm taking notes on while I'm listening to somebody, that does tend to work a little better actually by hand. But when I'm actually sitting down and have a chance to study something, using the computer makes it a lot easier to keep track of stuff, keep things organized. I do recommend learn your hotkeys. Those come in really handy. You know, shift, the asterisk space will give you a bullet point. Control enter will give you a page break if you need to do things completely like that. Your control X and control V for cut and paste, control C, all those things. Control Z is the best one ever. That's the undo. but it's easy to get caught up when you're typing, especially when listening to somebody talk. When you're typing, it's really easy to want to try to get things perfect again. And being able to accept that, okay, this isn't perfect, but I need to keep going, is a great thing. Now, with a recorded lecture, again, you can pause it and you can get caught up in your notes. But again, there's no point in just rewriting everything down. And so I recommend definitely if you are taking notes on a video, put timestamps in, and then you're going to be treating your notes similar to that other column in the Cornell method where you're keeping that index, where you're keeping those annotation type things. And so using a computer is fantastic because it does give you such additional flexibility that you can't have with paper notes, you know, unless you're physically cutting things out and pasting them or, you know, things like that.
Scrapbook notes.
Yeah, you know, and unless you build your own index or your own paper notes, you'll never get the same functionality as a Control F find. But at the same time, there are still pitfalls you want to try to avoid.
We hope this has been an informative episode for you to better your note-taking so you can perform better on your tests, on your projects, and retain information better.
Yeah. Notes are an important part of school, and knowing that there are different ways of doing it, knowing some of the common pitfalls, can certainly help make things more efficient. But thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll see you online.
See ya.